If you're snacking on anything but tasty cake, you're making a huge Miss Cake. A fistful of chocolate-covered raisins? Miss Cake. A spoonful of peanut butter? Bigger Miss Cake. Or the worst Miss Cake of all, your kid's Halloween candy, and it's April. If it's not tasty cake, it's a Miss Cake. Because nothing satisfies like a perfectly sweet butterscotch crimpet or rich and creamy chocolate peanut butter candy cake. Tasty cake. Accept no substitutes.
Hey everybody, and welcome to the Billboard.com Pop Shop Podcast. My name is Keith Caulfield, and I am the Senior Director of Charts at Billboard. And joining me, as always, is Billboard's Deputy Editor Digital, Katie Atkinson. Hi, Katie.
Oh, hey, Keith.
How's it going?
It's going well. How about yourself?
I'm fine. Did you have a nice weekend?
I had a great weekend. I've been gone for a long time. I've been in Maine.
You had a long, extra long weekend.
Absolutely. Yes. And it was great.
Yeah. As always, the Billboard Pop Shop Podcast is your one-stop shop for all things pop and Katie's vacation time in Maine.
Yes.
On Billboard's weekly charts. What's popping on the Maine radio stations?
Oh, well, we listened to a station called The Bear.
Oh.
And it was all pop, and it was great.
Oh.
Yeah.
So it's just... Is it
The Bear or The Moose? Oh, no. People of Maine, correct me.
Well, either is seemingly
it was
applicable.
Great. All I know is it was amazing.
It was a top 40 radio station.
Yes.
Okay. In addition, you can always count on a lively discussion about the latest pop news, fun chart stats and stories, new music, and guest interviews with music stars and folks from the world of pop.
Today on the show, we have chart news about Eminem, Troye Sivan, Why Don't We, and NSYNC.
NSYNC!
Plus, we're talking about all things awards.
Yeah.
I mean, it is kind of the kickoff of awards season, so it makes sense.
Yeah.
There is a possible Academy Award nomination looming for a certain pop diva.
Hmm.
And we're celebrating John Legend joining the elite EGOT club after his Emmy Award win the other night.
But first, before we get started, if you enjoy the podcast, subscribe to the show on iTunes or your favorite podcast provider so you won't miss an episode. And if you want to explore more podcasts from Billboard, visit billboard.com/podcasts. It's as easy as that. They're all there in one place. You can look at them all. Browse away. Okay. Let's do some chart chat. First up, Eminem, one of Katie's faves, right?
Yeah, Detroit.
Detroit. So therefore, you have to like Eminem.
Yeah.
Yeah. Duh. Eminem clocks his 9th number one album on the Billboard 200 chart as his surprise release, Kamikaze, which arrived without warning on August 31st, debuts atop the list with 434,000 equivalent album units earned in the week ending September 6th.
So you're saying the word got out?
Real quick. Real quick. That's the fourth biggest week of the year for an album. Notably, this is his, I said it was his 9th number one. The only folks that have more number ones than him. Katie, can you guess?
Ooh. Well, Jay-Z.
Yep, Jay-Z has 14.
Beyonce.
Nope.
Oh, not Beyonce. We've had this conversation before. I know that was Jay-Z. That's all I got.
Just tell you.
Yeah.
The Beatles have the most.
Oh, why don't I always just default to the Beatles on chart records?
They have 19 number one albums. Jay-Z has the second most with 14. Bruce Springsteen and Barbara Streisand are both tied with 11. And then Elvis Presley has 10.
Okay.
But Eminem now has 9.
That's elite company.
Yeah. And at this rate, considering that Eminem, he dropped this album less than a year after his last number one, Revival, maybe he's like, ooh. Maybe this, I can get used to this number one.
He's going to be like Future, just dropping number one albums 3 a year.
Yeah. Well, you never know. Also in the top 10 this week is friend of the podcast, Troye Sivan. He notches his 4th top 10 and his highest charting effort yet as Bloom bows at number 4. I happened to see him on The Late Show with Colbert.
Oh.
The other day. He not only sang, but he also talked about his new movie, Boy Erased.
Erased, yeah.
He does a pretty decent American accent in the movie, evidently.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Hmm. Anyway, next, for the first time in, a very long time, there are two boy bands in the top 10 of the Billboard 200 charts.
That's Katie's applause. Just very excited boy band applause.
Friends of the podcast, Why Don't We? Debuts at number 9 with their first full-length studio album, which is called 8 Letters. And they join BTS with their album, Love Yourself, Answer, which falls from number 1 to number 8 in its second week on the chart.
This is all very exciting. I love boy bands. Historically,
who doesn't?
I love boy bands. I love that there's a new wave of boy bands. So when was the last time that we had two boy bands in the top 10 at the same time?
It's a little tricky. It depends on how you define a boy band.
It depends on how you pronounce the word depends.
It depends on how you define a boy band.
Okay.
Now, I think, Katie can disagree with me, I think most boy bands are all male, obviously, pop vocal groups that don't really play instruments primarily and have a youthful female fan base as their core demographic. Maybe they dance, but they don't necessarily have to. But it's mostly about pop vocal that appeals to sort of like, oh my God, that.
That is very, I think that's pretty good.
Is that true?
Yes. No? I think traditionally, yes. I just feel like, you know, a self-proclaimed boy band like 5 Seconds of Summer might get left out of that description because they really do play all their instruments.
See, that's the thing, and that's what we're about to address.
Okay.
So back the last time anything approaching sort of boy band territory was on August 23rd, 2014, two all-male pop bands, and like bands like with capital B,
yeah,
that have youthful followings, were in the top 10 at the same time. That week, 5 Seconds of Summer's self-titled former number one album was actually at number 5, and The Vamps, Somebody to You, debuted at number 10. Both of them, 5 Seconds is an Australian pop band. The Vamps is a British pop band. Both of them kind of have, like, you know, boy band-ish qualities, but, you know, they're not like a singing and dancing, like, you know, vocal group.
Right.
So it's like squishy.
Yeah.
Like, they're not traditional boy
bands. I
mean,
some people try to call the Beatles a boy band, too, like the original boy band. So then you're just really getting...
It's tough. Yeah. So, I mean, if you consider them boy bands, then that is the last time it's happened.
Okay, what if you don't consider them boy bands?
Okay, well, then you go back a little bit further to 2013, August 17th. That week, clearly a boy band, Backstreet Boys, debuted at number 5 with In a World Like This.
Okay.
While a pop trio that never liked the term boy band, called Emblem 3.
Yes, straight off of X Factor.
The X Factor started at number 7 with Nothing to Lose. And they never liked the boy band tag because they could play instruments.
Yeah, there was a guy who played a guitar. I don't think they all did. I think two of the three played instruments.
Yeah, but I don't think they actually did that on the show.
No, one of them did. Okay. One, I think, played the guitar, I want to say, on the show. But, you know, correct me if I'm wrong. But they never embraced the label.
Yeah. So yeah, now we have like sort of, well, guys who actually play instruments are actually in a proper band. And then we have like a week where like one of these things that could be a boy band didn't really like to call themselves a boy band. Okay, so we go back further.
Okay.
2012. Definitely these are two boy bands, no doubt about it. May 12th, 2012. One Direction's former number one, Up All Night, their first album, was at number 4 in its 7th week on the chart. And that same week, The Wanted, another British boy band, clearly. Their self-titled album started at number 7.
Undeniable vocal groups with rabid lady fans.
Yeah. I'm sure there's some guy fans, too.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, come on. Okay, lastly, over on a chart that we don't talk about too much, the vinyl albums chart, we don't talk about it necessarily on this show, but I will often write about it in the pages of Billboard magazine because it's a really cool looking chart and I am weirdly fascinated with vinyl now.
Yes.
Another boy band, NSYNC, debuts on the chart with their 3 studio albums. So their 3 non-holiday studio sets, because most people don't consider holiday albums studio albums.
Part of the canon.
I don't.
Yeah, no. I wouldn't... I would not, like, if I were ranking their best albums.
It's like you put that aside.
Yeah, it's aside.
Like, does Mariah Carey consider, like, the Merry Christmas album part of her studio work?
That's a good question because, you know, she actually, you know, wrote All I Want for Christmas Is You. So it's a little different. But I don't think so. I mean, because most of it is covers.
Yeah, I'm not even actually sure.
Yeah.
Anyway, so
we're really defining things on this show.
Well, this is
Keith's job.
This is what I wrestle with every week. Is that a studio album or is it a mixtape? Is it is it just like a playlist or is it a regular album or whatever? Okay, so there are three non-holiday studio sets, which is their self-titled debut album, No Strings Attached, and Celebrity. All arrive on the tally after getting released on vinyl for the very first time. Unbelievably, they were never on vinyl.
That's wild.
Like, they were on CD and cassette.
Yes.
Back in the day, but never on vinyl. Because at that point, no one was producing
vinyl. It wasn't a thing like it is now. So it was like, it was past the days of making vinyl because people were listening to the record players and before the days of the, like...
retro resurgence. Yeah,
exactly.
So they all arrive on the chart and they are... all available in limited quantities at Urban Outfitters exclusively. And it's somewhere between, like, I think it's like 2,500 copies and 3,000 copies, depending on which
album. Wow, that is very few.
Yeah, so you should go check urbanoutfitters.com. And they're pressed in cool colors. So No Strings is on peach-colored vinyl.
Is it Scratch and Sniff, like the Call Me By Your Name soundtrack?
That would be inappropriate. I mean, it's not really, like, fitting for that particular album.
No.
But no, it's not. The self-titled album is on Limeade vinyl.
Ooh.
So it's kind of like a neon greenish sort of.
Okay.
And then Celebrity is on cotton candy colored vinyl. Yeah.
That sounds awesome. I don't own a record player, if I'm being completely honest.
Yeah, then it'd be kind of pointless.
This almost makes me want to go buy one.
See, this is like, how they get
no
you.
No joke.
This is how they get you.
This would be, that's so fun. Like, I specifically, Celebrity is such a good album, and I listen to it to this day, like, regularly.
Is it better than No Strings Attached?
Kind of. I feel like I have to say that very quietly.
Is that a controversial opinion?
Well, I just understand that No Strings Attached is, like, the ultimate, the most popular, the biggest, you know? But Celebrity, man, oof. So good.
Well, Celebrity has Pop, Gone, and Girlfriend, right?
Yes.
Those are the three singles.
Yes, but the deep cuts are where it's at on Celebrity. My favorite is called Do Your Thing.
Sure.
It is such a good song. If you have not listened to that song, Do Your Thing on Spotify. Listen to Do Your Thing. It's amazing.
What were the singles on No Strings that were not Bye 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 and It's Gonna Be My...
There was a slow song,
See, exactly.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I'm not, like, but it was the bigger deal. What, did it not sell more?
Oh, no, it sold the bajillions.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's just, like, the bigger deal.
It's funny. I think you actually remember more songs from the first album because
they just kept pumping out singles.
Like, I feel like there were, like, at least four or five singles from the first album.
Oh my God. Meanwhile, I Google No Strings Attached singles and get dating sites. I am not on the search for No Strings Attached singles.
Katie's now Googling.
This is on my work computer.
Their discography on Wiki.
No, but I really do want to see what their singles are for this. Okay, here we are. Okay, so Bye 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 and It's Gonna Be Me were the first two singles. Then I'll Never Stop was an international single,
yeah,
so I don't remember that. This I Promise You. That was the slow song
one.
I was thinking of. I was going to say God Must Have Spent a Little More Time on You, but that was the first album.
This I Promise You.
You had to have at least one ballad back in the day.
Yeah.
You know? That was the thing.
Yeah. Well, the first album clearly had more hits.
Yes.
But anyway.
Vinyl.
Gotta love it.
Okay, so... for our news over on Billboard.com today, it is a very special, like, awards show spectacular. So let's just get into the awards show madness.
Awards mania.
Awards mania. So you might have heard about A Star Is Born.
Maybe.
Maybe a little bit over this past weekend because it premiered at the Toronto International Film Festival on Sunday. And that was its North American premiere, I should say.
Oh, it already premiered overseas?
It must. Well, why are we saying North American premiere? Man, I am just Googling everything today. No, it was a premiere. Because no one had seen it before this, right?
I guess not.
I don't think so.
Well.
I mean, I hadn't heard any reviews from it other than it just, like, looked good. That's all I'd heard until this weekend when people were actually just raving about it after seeing it.
Maybe they're being
in
cute because they're going to also have its European premiere
at
the Venice
so
Film
then
Festival.
They can say that it's, like, some sort of exclusive then.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sure that's exactly the case. The movie, of course, stars Lady Gaga and Bradley Cooper, who also directed the film, and it follows the relationship of country music veteran Jackson Maine, played by Cooper, and budding singer-songwriter Allie, played by Gaga.
If this movie, this is the fourth iteration of this film, I believe.
Yes.
Yes.
The first, there was one in the 30s. Then Judy Garland did one in the 50s. So she was playing the, you know, Lady Gaga ingenue role.
Right.
And then Barbara Streisand was it with Kris Kristofferson in the 70s. And then now this is the fourth one. But I think they all had a different bent.
Yeah.
You know, like, this is not a straight remake. Like, Barbara Streisand's character was not named Allie, and, you know...
different kinds of music. And,
yeah, it's just this concept of the kind of grizzled veteran who is maybe down on his luck or, you know, past his prime, discovering this brand new talent and kind of bringing her to the forefront and having his own, like, renaissance because of it.
Mm-hmm.
That concept.
You know, a number of years ago, they were trying to remake this with Beyonce.
Yeah. It was, I believe, Clint Eastwood was going to direct.
Who was going to be the guy?
Ooh.
I forget.
Well, did we know? I don't know if we knew. I remember Clint Eastwood was for sure going to direct it, and Beyonce was attached to star.
Maybe it was like Will Smith or something. And I'm just guessing. I don't know.
So.
Anyway.
The movie premiered, and Twitter went wild.
As did the people that were there.
Yeah.
At the film festival.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, like reviewers were just
Whoa. I mean, when I say Twitter, I mean like film critic Twitter.
Oh, right, yeah.
There were people, reporters were just tweeting, this is going to win Best Picture. Like, it was, you know, the hyperbole was turned all the way up.
Wow.
People were super into this movie. It's going to open, actually, October 5th in theaters.
Super soon.
Yeah, that's way sooner than I thought.
Yeah, well, I feel like it was supposed to come out earlier this year, right? And then they pushed it to October because they felt that it had, like, a chance at, like, you know, awards.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, this is obviously the awards, you know, the perfect awards time to release it.
Well, all the other, like, the Streisand version and the Garland version and maybe the one before that all were nominated for different Academy Awards.
Have you seen the Barbra Streisand one?
I have.
I just watched it for the first time because they were playing it on AMC, so I think that... just, you know, getting hyped for the remake.
Closely now.
Yes.
Are you watching me now?
I think I took a lot away from that that movie. Like, it's fantastic. You should definitely watch it if you haven't seen it. But, like, her hair really struck me. It is like,
of all the things.
I know. It's like late 70s.
That frizzy Barbra Streisand
pro. Yes, yes. Anyway, so...
I'm not spoiling anything. There's a scene early on in the movie which is very reminiscent in the Gaga version, which is reminiscent of the one in the Streisand version, where Allie is, I guess, performing at like some sort of drag club.
Right.
And there's two drag race...
Shangela and Willem.
From RuPaul's Drag Race are the two sort of primary drag queens.
And apparently, we just reported on Billboard.com, Gaga handpicked Shangela to be her drag fairy drag mother, I believe is how they referred to it.
I guess Gaga introduced, like, suggested Shangela to Bradley Cooper, and then I guess someone suggested Willem. And I was watching a little snippet of a press conference with him and Gaga, and he said, Willem is just gold.
Mm.
I'm like... it's so crazy to hear like Bradley Cooper talking about like Willem.
Yeah.
And it's just, I mean, God love you, Willem. You know we do.
No, but like if you were wondering if drag is mainstream, the answer is a certain yes.
Yes. It's just so cool. It's
my
just so
one
amazing.
Last note on this is that I kind of love that we remember that Gaga had the huge moment on the Oscars a few years ago with the Sound of Music tribute.
Yep.
And I kind of love that this would be a total full circle moment if this really delivers on the Oscar buzz, that she kind of had, renaissance is not the right word, because it wasn't like she'd gone anywhere, but it was like she looked different in people's eyes after that. Like,
yes.
it was a reinvention of sorts, and what she's done a million of and throughout her, you know, career.
But I mean, that came after a time where she was having some difficulties being...
She hadn't had a hit in a while, yeah.
And her image was kind of tarnished, and it was coming after that whole art pop era where she was... I mean, I don't know exactly when it was, but I remember everyone kind of looking at Gaga in a different light.
Right.
And remembering, oh my goodness, she can be like this sort of poised, glamorous, like, you know, like star singing, you know, sort of operatic, you know, classic songs. I'm like, well, yes. Don't you remember like the Tony Bennett? I don't remember if the Tony Bennett album came before or after that.
I think before.
But now it's like, yes. Like, and in fact, she could get an Academy Award nomination for Best Actress for this.
Yeah, so I feel like, you know, Gaga continues to surprise, and I feel like that was almost the beginning of this era, that, and this would be kind of a nice little topper on it, well, in my opinion. So we'll wait. We'll wait till next year, 2019 Oscars, and we'll see. Finally, at the Creative Arts Emmys on Sunday night, John Legend took home the award for Outstanding Variety Special Live for his work as a producer on Jesus Christ Superstar Live in Concert, which means he officially completed his EGOT.
What's an EGOT?
Well, an EGOT is when someone wins an Emmy, a Grammy, an Oscar, and a Tony.
And we think that's a big deal because those are the four main prestige awards
in their field.
In the four entertainment disciplines, basically. The four big awards.
Exactly. Yeah. Sorry, Golden Globes. And it actually makes him the youngest person and the first black man to do so.
Yes, in competitive categories.
Oh, talk to me. Why is that?
Oh, because...
Oh, honorary.
Yeah, people have like Barbara Streisand is an EGOT recipient because she has an honorary
Tony, which I mean, Barbara could like sneeze and get a Tony. Why doesn't she just get the one woman show going on Broadway?
Well, one woman show on Broadway, you wouldn't, that actually couldn't get a nomination.
Oh,
because you have to, they used to have a category for that and then they got rid of it. And I think it's like you either have to be like a play or a musical.
Oh man.
I mean like Bruce Springsteen like wasn't nominated for his show this year.
And they gave him a special
award, but that's not a competitive award.
I get it.
So yes, he's one of the only, the handful of people to do it.
Yeah. So yeah, he joins very select ranks of performers. Two of those people are now Andrew Lloyd Webber and Tim Rice, who won alongside Legend in the same category on Sunday night, also
like
becoming EGOT winners.
They planned it.
It's also wild to me, like, it took a long time for Andrew Lloyd Webber to get it, but I guess he just hasn't done this kind of TV thing.
But it's like an Emmy. It's like outside of his discipline.
It is. Like, but he could just get a few more. Do Phantom Live. Do, like, you know, get it all going.
Avita Live.
Exactly.
Cats Live.
And so the three are now the 13th, 14th, and 15th performers to reach the milestone. So RuPaul also won on Sunday night, snagging his third trophy for outstanding host of a reality or reality competition program for the third year in a row.
For RuPaul's Drag Race. For a reality or reality competition program.
Oh, jeez. Another crazy
Just
category.
Rolls off the tongue. You think the Grammys have crazy categories.
Right.
Well, after all that Emmy talk, now it's time for the chart stat of the week. Guys, you know you better. Watch out. Some girls are only
about that thing. I like that new theme song.
There's a little bit of a kick to it. 20 years ago this week, Lauryn Hill's debut solo album, The Miseducation of Lauryn Hill, bowed atop the Billboard 200 chart. The set climbed in at number one on the list dated September 12th, 1998, and spent a total of four non-consecutive weeks at number one. Hill was already famous thanks to her work as one-third of the hip-hop group The Fugees, as the act had topped the Billboard 200 in 1996 with their album The Score. But Hill's solo album brought her an entirely new level of fame. Miseducation spun off the number one Billboard Hot 100 hit Doo Wop, That Thing, as well as other Billboard chart hits like X Factor and Everything Is Everything and more. That's just the tip of the iceberg. Really, the album is amazing. Like, if you haven't listened to it before, do. Or just buy it because it's worth your money.
And I can't believe it's been 20 years.
I think it came out, they either reissued it on vinyl or it just came out on vinyl for the first time to talk more about vinyl this week. Were you as enamored with the album?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
No, obsessed. Every song is amazing.
Every song's amazing.
Yeah.
It's just one of those albums where you're like, yes, of course. And you want to listen to the whole thing anyway. Anyway, I could digress and fall into a hole. Hill won 5 Grammy Awards the following year, including Best R&B Album, Best New Artist, and Album of the Year, obviously for The Miseducation of Lauryn Hill. Now, The Miseducation remains Hill's one and only studio album. In 2002, she released a live album, which was called MTV Unplugged Number 2.0. But she has released no other albums since. She is, however, currently on tour celebrating the 20th anniversary of Miseducation. So check out lauren-hill.com for concert dates and more information. So there you have it. This week in 1998, Lauryn Hill's The Miseducation of Lauryn Hill debuted at number one on the Billboard 200 chart.
See, no one loves you more than me, and no one ever will.
One of those concert dates is Hollywood Bowl with Dave Chappelle.
In just a couple days, yeah, she's playing like Red Rocks
as well. That's going to be a really cool concert.
The tour seems to go on for a while, so I wasn't sure if it was all 20th anniversary shows, because it's going like through Europe next year.
Right.
Oh, I don't know if it's 20th anniversary anymore. So I didn't want to like say like, oh, and it ends this day. I could be totally wrong.
Yeah.
But I'm not seeing her at the Bowl, but goodness, that album is great.
Are you a big Sister Act 2 fan?
She was great in Sister Act 2.
That was my first introduction to her.
I think most of us got our first introduction to Lauryn Hill through Sister Act 2.
So, I mean, she just like right then was a superstar instantly.
So charismatic, like, so funny.
So talented, so beautiful, so everything.
Everything is everything.
Everything is everything.
What song should we go out on?
Everything is everything.
Okay, we'll see you guys next time.
Bye. Let me tell you that everything is